A couple of weeks ago in Mark chapter 10, we heard the story of Jesus healing blind Bartimaeus, giving him sight. After that healing, Jesus continued his journey to Jerusalem because it was time for the Passover feast, and it was also time for Jesus to be betrayed and killed. Mark 11 begins the account of Passion Week, the week that would culminate in Jesus' death on the cross. Mark 11 is primarily about the triumphant entry into Jerusalem on the donkey. That's what we celebrate on Palm Sunday every year. So we're not going to look at that today. We're going to skip to Mark chapter 12. Mark 12 starts with Jesus still at the temple, giving a parable of judgment against the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders. He was then questioned by the Pharisees on taxation and by the Sadducees on marriage in the resurrection. The chapter ends with a section regarding the scribes, and that's the section we'll be in today. First, who were the scribes? The scribes were the guys who wrote copies of the Hebrew scriptures. So they were always reading the law and studying the law. They were considered the experts in Torah, and they were a part of the religious elite. So a scribe came to Jesus and asked him, "Which is the first commandment?" The first commandment of all. That's when Jesus recited the two greatest commandments: to love God with all of your heart and to love your neighbor as yourself. Those commands are from the Old Testament, by the way. Deuteronomy 6 and Leviticus 19. When the scribe left, Jesus started teaching the common people in the temple, and he had some negative things to say about the scribes. Picking up in verse 38, he said to them, "Beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplaces, the best seats in the synagogues, and the best places at feasts, who devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation." Jesus listed off things that the scribes did for the sake of getting attention: wearing long robes, being greeted in public places, praying long prayers, and sitting at the best seats. In other words, it was a big production when the scribes came around. This is almost identical to what Jesus says elsewhere. In Matthew 6, in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, "The hypocrites give charity and pray in public, and they sound the trumpets whenever they walk down the streets." That's pretty crazy, isn't it? A lot of fanfare for the hypocrites, all for the purpose of being seen by men. That was the intention: to feed their ego, to puff up their pride. Now, to be clear, there's nothing wrong inherently with wearing nice clothes, like robes. Robes are all over the Bible and in heaven. There's nothing inherently wrong with being greeted in public, having the best seat in the room, or even praying long prayers. But those things can be wrong if your intentions are wrong. That is what Jesus was criticizing here. Why did the scribes do these things? It wasn't for the benefit of others. It wasn't for genuine praise to God. It was for the benefit of themselves. Jesus said, "For a pretense, they make long prayers." Pretense means not being sincere, not being genuine. They prayed long prayers to be showy. They wanted to appear righteous and devout when their hearts were anything but. If you pray a long prayer, it should be because you genuinely love talking to your Lord and or you have a lot of things to pray about. That is the best reason for a long prayer. As a personal aside, I'm not a fan of the long prayers where they become teaching moments, where basically someone's praying, but they're really just teaching everyone in the room the stuff that they know. Okay? So try to avoid that if you can. All right. If you wear nice clothes, that's good. That's a way of showing respect to other people. But even that should be done with a sense of modesty. Modesty is not just about keeping your private areas covered, though it does include that. It's also about not drawing unnecessary attention to yourself. Robes are fine, but long and elaborate robes might be considered immodest. The scribes were wanting to draw attention to themselves. What about being greeted in public and having the best seats? Those things are fine if they are given to you as a gift from others. You don't demand special greetings or special titles. You wait for people to honor you on their own volition. You don't demand the best seat in the room. You wait for someone to invite you to the best seat. That would be the humble approach. But the scribes weren't so humble. Well, in the midst of these things, Jesus also said that the scribes devour widows' houses. What does that mean? That seems like a strange thing to throw in with these others. And it sounds more sinister. The robes, the greetings, the seats, the prayers, those aren't necessarily acts of violence against other people. But devouring widows' houses? That sounds like aggression. That's something that directly harms the other person. Some commentators will tell you that we have no idea what Jesus meant by saying this. How did the scribes devour widows' houses? We can only speculate. But if you just keep reading the text, I think the meaning becomes abundantly clear. This is a good lesson in letting Scripture interpret Scripture and paying attention to the details in a text. All right? Verse 41 says, Jesus sat down and watched as people put money into the treasury. The treasury would have been some sort of box or container at the temple for people to donate money. And the origin of this donation box probably comes from 2 Chronicles 24. That's where King Joash set up a donation box to raise funds to rebuild the temple. Okay? And for those who have been with St. David's for many, many, many years, you will know that our savings account has been known as the Chest of Joash for this very reason. The Chest of Joash. From John 2, we know that the temple in Jesus' day was undergoing construction by King Herod. So the treasury in Mark 12 was probably for the same purpose, to raise money for construction. Or maybe they were just there all the time for people to give all the time. So Jesus was watching as rich people came and donated large sums of money. But in verse 42, it says, a poor widow, meaning her husband has died, a poor widow walked up and gave 2 mites, which for us would be equivalent to 2 pennies. Okay? All she could give were 2 small coins. So that's what she did. Verse 43. So he called his disciples to himself and said to them, assuredly, I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all of those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. You've no doubt heard this story before, because these verses are repeated often as an example of how selfless we should be with our money and with our giving. This story is commonly referenced when pastors talk about tithing, right? Look, Jesus commended this woman because she gave all that she had. She was full of faith, and you should be too. So give, even if it's all that you have. Well, certainly we should be generous with our money, and we should be tithing to the church. But is that the point of this story? Was that the point Jesus was making? I don't think so. Jesus had just critiqued the scribes for devouring widows' houses. And the very next thing that happened was a widow giving her last two coins to the temple. Is that a coincidence? No. We shouldn't separate Jesus' critique apart from the widow. They are connected. It's the story of the widow that helps us understand Jesus' critique of the scribes. This is not a passage on tithing. Tithing is not what the widow was doing. What is tithing? Tithing is when you give God 10% of your increase. Meaning, you get paid for working a job, and you give 10% of that money to God through your local church. That's tithing. And that's something that all employed Christians should be doing, even teenagers and young adults living at home. But Jesus clearly says that this woman had no increase. She had no husband to provide for her, and apparently she had no job, because the two coins were her whole livelihood. That's what Jesus said. This widow had no income, and yet she gave all the money she had saved. This was not a good situation, contrary to what we usually hear about this passage. Now, don't get me wrong. The widow isn't to be condemned. Okay? Jesus did commend her faith. Her small donation was more valuable than all the other donations. How so? Because the rich gave out of their abundance. They had plenty left over to live on. To give a large sum of money was of no consequence to them, whereas the widow gave out of her poverty. She had no abundance, and therefore no money left over to live on. Her intentions were pure, and she was full of faith. But the bigger point here is that the widow was a victim. The widow was a victim of the scribes devouring her house. How did they devour her house? Oh, gee, we have no idea. By taking all of her money, her whole livelihood. They were okay with this system, and they promoted it, and they benefited from it. They exploited the poor and took advantage for their own gain. The Bible has a lot to say about how we treat widows. Exodus 22 says, "You shall not mistreat widows or any fatherless child." Yahweh warns that if you mistreat them, that his wrath will burn against you, and that your spouse will become a widow. Your spouse will become a widow. What does that mean? That God's going to cause you to die. That's no small matter. That's a very serious threat. 6 different times in Deuteronomy, Israel was commanded to take care of its widows and to not pervert justice against widows. Similar commands are repeated in the New Testament. Pure religion, James says, includes caring for widows and orphans. And think of the widow in 1 Kings 17. Through Elijah, God provided miracle food to the widow and her son. This is serious stuff to God. And the scribes were found to be disobedient. They were mistreating the poor and committing injustice against this widow. That's ironic for them being scribes, right? Because they were the experts. And yet, they were not faithful. We recited Psalm 146 today, which says, Yahweh upholds the widow. That's what Jesus was doing here. Jesus is Yahweh in the flesh, and he has come to uphold those who have been oppressed, and he has come to visit his wrath upon the oppressors. That was good news for the widow. Jesus wasn't saying, oh yeah, that's the right way. Give all of your livelihood for the sake of the temple. No, not at all. In fact, as you continue into chapter 13, Jesus declares that the temple will be destroyed. The temple will be destroyed. This story is a story of judgment against the scribes. It's not to say, give all that you have. It's to say, look at what the scribes are doing to the widows. My wrath is burning against them. They were mistreating the widows, so their wives would become widows. They devoured widows' houses, so their house, primarily the temple, would be devoured. You see that? They're devouring widows' houses, so what they hold dear, the house that they have used for their own gain, will be destroyed. It will be devoured. That's eye for eye justice, which is God's justice. The scribes weren't just prideful hypocrites trying to look important. They were the oppressors of the poor. They caused financial harm to them. The scribes exalted themselves on the backs of the poor. They intimidated and manipulated to keep themselves at the top. What should they have done instead? Instead, they should have given the two coins back to the widow. They should have found ways to build her up, to help her financially. That's what Yahweh did for the widow of Zarephath, right? He didn't just provide for Elijah and leave the woman destitute. No. He increased her supply. That's what the scribes should have been doing for the widows in their day. The contrast between the widow and the scribes couldn't be more stark. The widow was a poor giver. The scribes were rich takers. So Jesus took from them. They take, Jesus takes. He took the glory of the temple away from them and he gave it to people like the widow. To people like you. To people like me. Jesus' body, the church, is the new temple filled with the glory of God. This passage is a warning, first of all, to church leaders. To not be like the scribes. To not make themselves rich by making others destitute. It also reminds us that church leaders cannot require more than what God requires. What God requires is enough. 10% of your increase is enough. Church leaders must not become oppressive with money or any other topic. It is my duty as your pastor to not guilt trip you into giving more money than God requires. Now, you are certainly free to do so. That's what we call a free will offering. But that is not something that is to be forced or obligated upon you. Now, I will teach about tithing because I believe that is biblical. And so I will tell you to tithe. I will tell you you should be giving 10% of your increase. But that is as far as it can go. This passage serves as a warning to all of you. Because each of you, no matter your circumstances, are forbidden from exploiting the poor. You are not to glorify yourself on the backs of others. You must not rob people or cheat people out of what is rightfully theirs. You don't take credit for someone else's work. That's a temptation. Don't do it. If you manipulate people to get ahead, Jesus' wrath will burn against you and your house will be destroyed. Don't be a hypocrite, but in all things be honest and sincere. You are not to puff up your own pride and ego. You are to exalt the lowly. And maybe you need to look around and find the people who need some exalting. This is a call to action for you. Who can you exalt? Who needs your grace and your blessings? Financially, perhaps, but not just that. Spiritually, emotionally, companionship and friendship. Don't neglect the people that you are supposed to care for. That is how you build a house instead of devouring it. That is how you keep your house from being torn down by Jesus' wrath. God will exalt you. He will put you in places of honor, just like he did Jesus. Remember, our passage took place during Passion Week. In just a few days, Jesus would be arrested and put on trial by the religious leaders. He humbled himself to be killed on the cross, and then he was exalted to a resurrected, glorified, immortal body. He was exalted to be a husband to the widow, a husband that will never die again. Jesus is the ever-living husband to his bride, the church. God will exalt you, but you have to get there his way. Not by your own way, not by the ways of the world, but by the ways of Jesus, who is the true husband and the true expert in God's law.